Welcome to Create Your Reality, the show that empowers you with information on how to drive your brain and create a more purposeful, joyful, and fulfilling life for yourself in the process. Your host is Lynn Crocker. Each week, Lynn demystifies your brain's processes and shows you how to utilize tools that you already possess to identify habitual thought patterns that are not serving you. You'll hear from Lynn and other industry experts who will help you understand how your thoughts create your reality and how you can use this awareness to change your life from the inside out. This is all right here on Amazing Women of Power Radio, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International.
Hi, and welcome to Create Your Reality. I'm your host, Lynn Crocker. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Amy Johnson. Amy is a psychologist, master certified coach, and author. Her passion is helping people see through their layers of limiting beliefs so that they can connect with the peace and wisdom underneath. Amy previously joined me to talk about her book, Modern Enlightenment, Psychological, Spiritual, and Practical Ideas for a Better Life. In this book, she outlined down-to-earth ways to adjust how you see and interact with the world, allowing you to become more aware and awake in your life. Today we're going to talk about her newest book titled Being Human, Essays on Thought Mirrors, Bouncing Back, and Your True Nature. According to Amy, the nature of all human beings is well-being, clarity, and peace of mind. Anytime you're experiencing confusion, pain, fear, or loss, or questioning yourself or your abilities, you're stuck in negative habitual thinking, and that is what is holding you back from the peaceful experience of who you really are. Her message is simply that there is nothing to do, nothing to change, you're already perfect, and life is easier than you're making it. Amy has a lot of insights and unique perspective to share, so let me go ahead and bring her on. Hi, Amy. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it was great. We did an interview about a year ago on another book that you had written, and so as I mentioned in intro, today we're going to be talking about your new book. So why don't we just start with tell me a little bit about the kind of that aha moment that sparked the inspiration for this one.
Oh, wow. Well, there were a lot, and you know, it's funny about aha moments.
Right.
sometimes they actually feel like aha moments. And
No. Sometimes
they just feel like, wait a minute. Like, you kind of look back and you think, like, what's going on here? Like, I feel different. Something's mm-hmm. changed, you know? And mm-hmm. honestly, that's kind of a lot more of what I had kind of leading up to this book and mm-hmm. while I was writing it and all of that. It's a lot of those, like, they say, what's the expression they say? Like, nothing's changed, but everything's different.
Yeah.
It's like I just found over just some of my own, you know, stuff that I was learning, you know, on the side and kind of using with my clients and stuff over the course of maybe a year and a half, that, like, life was a lot easier and I wasn't worrying as much. And things like that were really kind of different, but I don't remember a specific aha or anything changing necessarily.
Mm-hmm. But you got that awareness of just life is a lot easier than what you were thinking it or what you were making. That was kind of that awareness.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's kind of, I guess, to sum it all up shortly, it's kind of like we're living in paradise, but we don't see it.
Mm.
And, you know, and it's okay to not see it. It's not about, I think everyone knows, no, not everyone, but people who would listen to your show know that we're actually living in paradise, but we don't see it. And yet, you know, a lot of self-help and other very well-meaning things would set us on this course to make sure we try to see it all the time because that's what's supposed to make for a good life. And mm-hmm. I think I don't really agree with that. I think just knowing it in the back of your mind is enough sometimes, especially when you really have like a deep knowing of that. And, you know, because then all this other stuff that doesn't always feel like paradise on a moment-to-moment basis,
mm-hmm.
it just feels different. You just see it in a different way, kind of take it with a grain of salt, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and say, all right, you know, today was a hard day, or, you know, this didn't turn out the way I wanted it to, but it's not impacting my life overall. Like, it's okay. I'm not supposed to be happy all the time, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, that makes you happy much more of the time.
And that is ironic, and you just made the great statement. We're not supposed to be, quote-unquote, happy all the time, and I think that is a big misconception that perhaps some parents instill in children, and they grow up that way, is that, you know, life's supposed to be easy and life's supposed to just be bliss, and it's not. You need those bad days to appreciate the good ones, and if I'm understanding what you're saying, if you stay in that place of not a detachment, but just in more of that observer and just see the ins and outs and the flow of life, that it does bring a true joy rather than just a fleeting happiness.
Yeah, I love just that, like how you said it, the ins and outs and the flow of life, you know, mm-hmm. because it really is. When none of it seems like that big of a deal, it is really cool and exciting. It's like watching a movie. You see people get killed, you see people fall in love, break mm-hmm. up, and, you know, it's a movie, so it's okay, and that's kind of how I think it can be with life.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the misconceptions, I guess, that keep people from experiencing this true joy and peace is this attachment that everything needs to be perfect. Mm-hmm. I think another one that you brought up in the book is that the sense that, you know, I need to change and be a better version of myself to be happy. And that's a misconception, right?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, and it's very firmly rooted in this idea that what we do out in the world, especially, you know, mm-hmm. or how we are or whatever, is what impacts how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's the other way around. It's how we feel. How we feel affects how we feel. I mean, it sounds crazy, but it's all internally generated. And then how we feel is what determines what we even see out in the world, let alone what we do and how we interact with things, you know. So just that little shift of always starting from within and knowing that it's kind of projected out rather than how we, all, every single human I know, myself included, very naturally will look outside and then try to change those things and bring it into ourselves, and it just doesn't ever work that way.
No, it doesn't, but that is exactly what people try to do. So how can someone start to view life from the inside out or take responsibility for that? Because that is, I guess, a great deal of responsibility. It's much easier to say, oh, I'm feeling bad because, you know, someone did this to me or this happened to me, so now I feel bad. But what you're suggesting is that somebody actually take responsibility and recognize, no, it's my reaction to that that's making me feel bad. So do you have suggestions for how people can shift that around a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't even think of it so much as taking responsibility as kind of just seeing how it works. So so if we have to take responsibility, that sort of implies that we're responsible, obviously, but that we're, like, doing it, you know?
Right.
Like, I just see things the way I see them and everyone else does, and I don't really get a feeling of, like, me having chosen that necessarily.
Okay.
So, you know, you have a bad day or something's going wrong, you're experiencing that, but again, if we go back to how we kind of started, that it's okay. Like, we don't have to try to change that in any way. There's not necessarily anything to take responsibility for as much as just seeing that when I think certain things, I feel those things.
Hmm.
So we're always feeling whatever it is that we're thinking, and we're always getting a constant stream of thought coming through our senses and into our awareness, and that stream of thought is always changing. And seeing that that is what powers our experience of life. So it's always coming, you know, from this stream of thought. It's like if you're thinking about a movie projector, there's the film that's on the reel that's spinning, and that's powering what you see on the screen. Well, that stream of thought is powering what we see in our lives. And it's constantly going. It's constantly changing and shifting. And, yes, it can feel like we're stuck in ruts of thinking, and we do get temporarily stuck in ruts of thinking. But that's not the nature of the system. The nature of the system is that it's always moving and going. And so I think when people see that, like, and, you know, that's very, like, Cliff Notes version of it.
Yeah.
But when you kind of see how that system sort of works, you stop looking outside because it's not, and it's never anything out there. And that is huge freedom, you know. To really, really just stop trying to change the things around you. I guess that's kind of how we sort of take responsibility. And it's, I don't know if it's easier or harder, but it definitely feels better because it, you know, it's easy to, I suppose, to blame things, like you were saying, blame things out in the world. But then it feels horrible because suddenly you're a victim and you just are stuck and there's nothing you can do unless you can manage to change the world, you know, try. So this at least lifts you off the hook for trying to change yourself or change the world because you're just kind of seeing how it's just this natural flow.
I love that analogy that you used a couple of times now so far in the interview, is that it is like a movie, and you just use the stream of thought as like a projector just reflecting things that are going on or just showing things that are going on, and each individual has the opportunity and to just view that as what you're saying. It's just, that's just what's going on. I don't need to react to it. I don't need to get stuck in it, and just recognize that that is the nature of things, that there's just constantly thoughts going through our mind, and that's just how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And we, you know, and it's not our job to write what's on the film and, you know, try to control it all. But what happens, I think, is that when you start to take that perspective, like you're saying, like just kind of see it unfolding and this is just how it is, and you're not so attached to it, you do find some space to kind of insert your own edits here or there, you know, like you can kind of be like, okay, well, I'm having this experience because I'm having this particular thinking, whatever it is.
Right.
And, you know, it, in those moments when you're not so attached to it, that's when it occurs to you, like, oh, well, maybe there's a different way. And so it's not about stepping in to change your thoughts in any kind of, like, effortful way, but that's the natural consequence, I think.
Yeah, they just need to be present and just observe, and then that creates the little spaces in between where you're saying, where you can start to perhaps insert and edit and get things to go maybe the way you want, and your thoughts to go the way you want. So that's empowering, as you said.
And, yeah, it's a load off because there's a lot less to do.
Yeah, definitely. It doesn't seem like nearly as much work and nearly as hard as sometimes people make it, and me included. And I shared before we got on the call that I was definitely one of those people that I read so much. I think a lot of people on this journey definitely read a lot of different books. And so I would read things and try to figure out what's the truth? What's the truth they're saying? What's the truth they're saying? And try to piece it all together. And I just recently decided that my job is just to be happy. It's just to be joyful and enjoy this experience of life and not be so in my head trying to figure everything out. And that is a great relief. And I think a lot of people get into that real intellectual part. And what you're suggesting in the book is just let all that go and just be.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I just think that I just heard Michael Neal say something the other day that he was talking about this kind of, you know, pursuit of whatever it is we pursue all the time,
yeah,
and how people get on this, you know, like, well, when at the end of my life, this is, I want to look back at my life and say this, or I want to look back and feel this way or whatever.
Right.
And he said, you know, one day it just occurred to me that at the end of my life, I don't really want to be looking back at my life. Like, why not be in the moment, enjoying the last moments of life, instead of going back and evaluating things? You know? And yeah, that kind of hit me too. Like, oh, yeah.
That is quite a shift. Instead of, living your life, again, with, you know, the bucket list and things you want to do, and so that you can be right laying and getting ready to pass into the next realm, whatever that is. You want to be present for that moment and that passing rather than reflecting back.
Right. And why not just be present in all of the moments too, you know? If we're not building up to anything here, we're just here to kind of be present and enjoy what we have in front of us. I mean, there's truly nothing to do. And it's such a, you know, we're talking about it in very kind of abstract way, but it's a very tough thing, obviously, for humans to do. You know, but you know, because we're so used to just doing so much and thinking ahead and planning and making things happen. But and those things are wonderful if we want to do them. There are things that it's really fun to plan for and to make happen, you know.
Yeah,
it's just that shift from doing it for fun versus doing it because it's just what we think we need to do to be happy or something.
And I agree with you. There is obviously the balance between doing things on the physical plane to, you know, like you wrote the book, you know, you made the effort to write the book and took the time, but not to take all that too seriously, to really still stay at that more observational standpoint, and as you're pointing out, observe, well, why am I doing this? Why am I planning this and putting all this in place? Is it because I think I have to, or is it because it brings me joy? And just really evaluating, paying attention to what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah,
I think that's a really good approach. Yeah. So, the book itself, you describe it as it's, you know, it's not a self-help book. It's definitely not a book that is, you know, these are your five steps to happiness. So, there's a certain approach that you suggest that people take when they read your book, and it's, you know, kind of to read it for fun. And so, talk a little bit about maybe the mindset that you're hoping readers would get into when they're looking reading through your book.
Yeah, because it's not full of things to do. There are no exercises or, you know, little bullets to tell you to stop stop and ponder something or whatever. I think it is best read, I think I said in the book, like you are reading a text message from your friend,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's not about, the thing about all this is, like everything we've even said so far, you could get really in your head about it and mm-hmm. be like, wait a minute,
right.
you mean my life is generated like a film from inside of me and, man, that sucks. Like, it's hard, and you're never going to wrap your head around it intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you do, it's not going to, you know, you get it intellectually, which is where, you know, nearly all of my clients start, where I definitely was for a long time. Like, I get it intellectually, but
mm-hmm.
I don't feel any different for it, you know?
Right.
So you don't want to get caught up in the intellect of it. It's more of a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, that's what insight is, I think, and those aha moments are. It's like, it's a feeling. Something clicks. It's not logical or linear, intellectual. It's something deeper within you that just hears something and suddenly things are different. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, as a scientist, it gives me hives to even say that, but it truly is the way that it works, you know. I wish there was a formula. I would love to just give people a formula, but there's not. And so
mm-hmm.
it's about, yeah, like kind of just reading it for fun and feeling that deeper feeling. If something speaks to you, it doesn't have to make logical sense right away.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you're unintelligent or, you know, not informed. If you
mm-hmm.
just follow the feeling, like that's kind of where your insights are.
Mm-hmm. And I love that. The difference, what you were just saying, between the, you know, intellectually understanding something versus what I'm going to call insightful understanding, which is the feeling. And we are so trained in this society to just stay in our brains, and like you said, try to figure
yeah.
it out, the logical sense. I want the formula. I want the steps. I want this and that. And this concept is just too big for our little brains to comprehend, but it is something that our energy systems and our emotional systems and the feeling and the intuition can grasp. And if somebody is willing to accept it on that level and not have to dive into it intellectually, then they can soar with the information and start to
yeah.
live their life from this higher place of joy.
Definitely. And, you know, words just don't do it justice anyway.
No.
So you can hear the words all you want. And
mm-hmm.
how often have you, like, heard words that spoke to you one day and then you hear the exact same words and they just fall flat because,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it just isn't the words. It's something else that's kind of just awoken within you.
Yeah. So just to read the book for fun, let the insights land where they land. Don't analyze it. Just really absorb the information from that really light place, I think is what you're saying is the good approach for reading your book.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And you have, because I know you have a couple children, and so a lot of the stories in the books and the things that you're sharing are from maybe a perspective of a kid. So let's talk a little bit about kids. Why are they just so naturally able to be in the moment and just to be joyful and not in their head analyzing at things?
Well, because we haven't gotten to them properly yet.
We haven't
ruined them yet.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, really, it's like that's why it's just so fascinating to observe kids and,
mm-hmm.
and for everyone and, you know, whether you have them or not, like
mm-hmm.
just to kind of remember back even to how it felt to be a kid, because we all come totally equipped for all of this. Like
mm-hmm.
we have those insights, you know, before we are born into this planet, I believe. And
mm-hmm.
then we kind of come in and we develop brains and egos and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly but surely we kind of forget. And kids remember more, you know. So really, like, the reason I think that kids are so naturally joyful
mm-hmm.
much of the time is that they just are not caught up in their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And they let thought come. They have as much thought as adults do, but they
mm-hmm.
don't get wrapped up in it. They don't think about their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They just think, but they don't think about their thinking. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, my kids will be miserable one minute and, like, happy and jumping around the next minute. And that never occurs to them to be odd. But for an adult, we would say, am I bipolar? What's wrong with me? Am I in a good mood or am I in a bad mood? I have to figure out my mood. I'm like, no, you don't. Kids don't. They just go with the flow.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they're not I love thinking about their thinking. That is exactly what adults do. Like you said,
yeah.
I'm in a bad mood. Why am I in a bad mood? Let me spend some time figuring this out instead of accepting I am. Okay, what's next, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, and and I agree, too. We come into the world, obviously, with this skill set and this ability, and then somewhere along the line, it gets trained out of us, and we start to then identify with our minds and think of ourselves as our minds rather than as this full energetic being. And the, and I think it's that identification with the mind. The mind has the truth. The mind has the answers. Again, it's getting back to that intellectual approach is not creating happiness and joy. It's creating disconnect.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, I really loved the book. I thought it was very easy to get through, really, of course, well written. And it opened my mind to a lot of these concepts and things that I've been trying now to practice since I read it. So for listeners out there, how can they get your book? I know you sent it to me. Is it available through Amazon.com or what?
Yep, it's on Amazon. So, you can find it there.
Okay, great. So, listeners, the name of the book, again, is Being Human, Essays on Thought Mares, Bouncing Back, and Your True Nature. You can get a hard copy or Kindle version on Amazon.com. And as I said, I really enjoy it, and I highly recommend getting a copy. And again, remember to read it from that place of happiness and joy. Just absorb all the information and let the insights land where they land. And Amy, I know today is your birthday, so happy birthday. I'm going to get that out on the air, and I really appreciate you taking time out of your special day.
Thank you. It's always great to talk to you.
So listeners, this wraps up today's show. As always, I hope you got a lot out of it and that the approach to living that Amy's outlined really helps you on your continued journey to create a joyful, fulfilling reality for yourself. Be sure to tune in next week when my guest will be Jannetty Morota. Jannetty is a psychologist, author, and longtime practitioner of mindfulness and meditation. Her recently published book titled 50 Mindful Steps to Self-Esteem offers mindfulness practices that you can use to help you quiet the self-criticism and self-judgment that stands between you and a happier life. We're going to talk about what it means to be mindful, how you can practice it, and how mindfulness can be used to cultivate self-acceptance and self-compassion. It's going to be a great show, so mark your calendar.
You've been listening to Create Your Reality on Amazing Women of Power Radio, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. Tune in next Monday at 11:30 a.m. Pacific Time to hear more from Lynn and her guests. If you want to re-listen to this show or previous shows, you can find them at createyourrealityradio.com or createyourreality.podomatic.com. Thanks for listening.